And thank you for all the very interesting conversations that just popped up in interim. But there are questions and observations to be made. So, questions, comments? Tom.
Thanks. I'll start it off by showing how to use the microphone. Yay! I'd like you to talk about the whole concept. I did hear it once in here of intentional communities. Because, you know, what you showed us was a neighborhood as an intentional community. But what we more often hear is it's like a faith community becomes an intentional community. So what's going on?
Intention is something that I think Word and Life ought to look at seriously. Perhaps Lynn McTaggart's intention experiment, which grew out of her work on the field. Intention, electromagnetically as well as semantically as well as emotionally and intellectually, is a very powerful and coherent thought form. It's like, it attracts manifestation to it. If it's very, very steady and if it's whole. And by that, I mean not a thin little greedy intention. Oh, I need another $20. I'm going to look for $20. If it comes out of that whole gathered human intelligence and is expressed with clarity, it becomes a kind of divining rod. That is my experience with it. Intentional communities, we have read about them for years and years. It's one of the social phenomenon of the 60s, and it has continued to develop and to grow. I'll tell you a quick story about an intentional community that I'm very familiar with. It's taught me a lot. When my sister, brother-in-law, and I were looking at our graduating children, and we realized that Ted was going to take an early retirement from Pactel, we thought that something that we had been thinking about for years over the campfires when we would camp with all of our children together might be interesting to look at. We thought about the possibility of pooling our resources together and creating a family compound, a kind of homestead where our young kids, none of whom had jobs, and two of them still hadn't graduated, but we're almost there. We were just waiting for the last of the tuition payments to disappear. We thought it could be a gathering place. Plus, we were good friends. And we had an elderly mother who was teetering between one care place and another. So my sister and her husband traveled for a year. I covered Santa Barbara looking for the site that might hold a family compound like this. Couldn't find anything that had the kind of space that matched the kind of money that we had to spend. So we began to pray about it. And I do believe prayer is a form of intention. We were very clear about what we needed and wanted. And we simply saturated it every early morning in that kind of prayer. We set up a date by which we would have to have this thing solved. We set up the rough area of how much money we really could afford, etc. And all of this just offered in prayer and held. We found an extraordinary place that was just on 1 acre. It was a part of an old Montecito estate that had been the workers' quarters. It carved off a part of the formal gardens of the old estate house, but it had the old shop, the well house, the truck barn that we turned into a studio. It had a garage that we turned into another studio. It had a separate house, then it had a big house. All these little funny nooks and crannies that we could probably redo and make into small living spaces. But it was a big undertaking, and we decided that we would have a big family council, and we would attempt intentional planning. So I came across this document as I just moved from this wonderful place 27 years later, and there are all the signatures of all of our children agreeing to this simple one-page document about why we're doing this, what we expect from each other, what our hopes are, and what it's going to cost us in terms of labor, patience, etc. We wrote it all out. My sister's an old tennis coach. I'm an old teacher. We kind of know how to draw something like this up. And it held. The first 3 or 4 years were coming back into an ordinal family arrangement in which everyone there was at the top of their professional game. It was like getting Albert Schweitzer, Golda Meir, Margaret Thatcher, and George Bush all together in the same place. We were all used to running successfully, competently, our own show. So simply ironing that much out was immense. Trying to come to some kind of fairly easy unanimity took a long time. But we realized at that point that we had found some kind of sweet spot. I didn't think until many years later that this had something to do with evolutionary patterns. But I think that nature and evolution, homeostasis of the planet Earth, all depend on certain kinds of proportions of scale and presence, and that we had found a particular sweet spot in terms of creating an ecosystem. This family compound has launched more lives than I can possibly begin to tell you about. It's mended more lives. It's brought more blessings into us. But it has been apparently the right number of beds, the right number of kitchens, the right kind of intention. And it has been intention that has rescued us. Whenever we begin to go offside, remember what our intention here is, and we would come back to it. One half of that property listened to Rush Limbaugh all these years. The other half to National Public Radio, NPR. We are the living proof that peace can come in our time. But that's an example, a family example of an intentional community that I believe was one of these extended families that have somehow the right intention, about the right number, and it attracts, if it is growing and evolving, it attracts unexpected kinds of abundance that we could write stories about. That sounds like a faith story, doesn't it? But it's true. So I think this is the way the world works. So, sorry, now.
That is such a wonderful story. I knew a little about that, but thank you so much. Before I, what I want to bring to your attention, I want to just say that I think that the Immaculate Heart community here is such an intentional community.
Yes.
It hasn't been for me, and people want to chide me a lot because Don and I do not find that for ourselves. But it is certainly amazing and at the edge group,
yes,
of men and women there at La Casa de Maria or down in Los Angeles. What I wanted to ask you about, I always delight in what you have to say about the heart and about the heart having an electromagnetic field that extends way beyond that of the mind. And so I found it missing in what you said today. Now, I know you couldn't possibly begin to say everything, but I would think that in cradling the infant, the heart electromagnetic energy would be more influential than that of the mind. So could you just weave that in,
sure,
how those two poles
Thank
work?
You.
Okay, thanks.
I've come to think of the mind as a much larger field in the years that I've been learning and researching and teaching, so that now I think of it as a big matrix that different portions of our anatomy feed into. The heart is our highest intelligence. It keeps track of everything in the body, and it reports it out pulse beat by pulse beat, so that the whole system knows exactly what's going on. But it also, as Don suggested, operates with information fields that are outside the body, monitoring what's going on in the near environment and monitoring what's going on in the far environment. At some point, that information field leaves the resonances of standard space-time Earth and moves into, we can only make guesses and don't have much of a vocabulary to describe these very subtle, vast gulfs of information that surround us in the cosmos. The heart operates through all of those. We're only just beginning to know what the heart does, but Dawn is exactly right. The heart's energy is what is there for the child. I did not take the time to show a lot of slides about what happens with hospital births, but let me just tell you quickly that this is where the heart particularly has a major role. Nature's path is to bear the child and have it put immediately in the cavity of the mother's abdomen ribs so that it is still beside the heart. That heartbeat has been the child's environment. When it is taken away for 45 minutes to 4 hours, it just depends upon how clean the hospital wants this little tiny baby to be, when in fact, in primitive births, the mother is loving the baby and slowly rubbing the vermix, this funny waxy stuff all over the baby's skin, into the baby's body, because by doing that, she makes the final connection between the nerve endings of the skin. It takes months for those nerve endings to finally find their way into fruition when they're scrubbed down with detergent. So up to about 100 years ago, infant mortality was much lower than it is with industrialized birthing. U.S. birth rates are appalling in terms of the rest of the world. But above all, it is the loss of the heart's signal, that tactile, real resonating environment of the mother. The baby will recover, and so will the mother, and we all do. Goodness, I was born in a hospital, and I was separated from my mother, but we managed to, you know, recombine fairly quickly. But we didn't have to. The children who are born right back into their mother's arms instantly start smiling. The rest of them take 3 weeks to start smiling. It's just a lag that our industrialized ignorance has interjected into the lives of our very young children, but we've fallen off the arc of that evolutionary continuum here, as we've fallen off in so many other places. But this perhaps will give us a chance to address a little bit about the heart. Thank you, Dawn. Yes.
My name is Peter. I haven't been here for a while because I'm ashamed to say I couldn't afford it. But I was at Mass this morning, and I distinctly heard towards the end to come here today, and I am so glad I did. 10 days ago, my grandson announced that he and his girlfriend were going to have a baby, and where he was extremely joyous, because I know it's an affirmation of his manhood, she was as nervous as a cat in a hot tin roof, which was frightening to me. I was moved to go home and make a list of all of the losses that have occurred to humanity through war, etc., etc., over the course of the last 200 years. And it came to in excess of 1 billion. And we've lost an additional 25% of that number to abortion, which to me is horrific and frightening, and probably something that contributes to the low birth rate in this country. What you showed me today is the miracle that I've just come to know of what life can be, starting from the very initiation And I've got those books now, and I'm going to make my grandson and his girlfriend read them. And I'll encourage them with some... I've got some paintings that have some value, and I'll bribe them to read them so that they will know what you have told us, that in that child, in that new birth, it's humanity's future. And I ask that everybody pray that we stop destroying humanity's future. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. That is a sacred sharing. Don't go away. And it just deserves that pause of respect. Thank you. Yes.
Well, thank you for your presentation today, Pat. As always, it's exhilarating and probably take me a while to figure it all out. You mentioned, and I really appreciated it, that about holding a positive intention, especially in the upcoming weeks and months, given what's going on. But I was wondering if perhaps you had a suggestion for Word in Life as a whole for a collective intention.
When I look at Word in Life, as I've come to know you, and the first time I think I attended one of your meetings was you were meeting in a Catholic parish across town. Cynthia Bourgeold had come, Holy Cross, yes, and I was thrilled to hear Cynthia, but I was fascinated at this group, this polyglot group from all over Santa Barbara who were actually interested in this stuff the way I was. And so I asked a few questions. Oh, yeah, this has been going on for years. And then my own career picked up again, and I didn't get back to you for several more years. But I have watched and loved you for a long time now. I believe, number one, that Word in Life is creating its own field here in Santa Barbara. I think you have been persistent, steady, clear in your objectives. You built a genuine community out of all of your meetings. I think you're doing actual work by satisfying your curiosity, by following spiritually the things that you're passionate about. All those are good things, but it is this routine of coming together, coming into this unified silence, beginning with an output of intentional blessing. Wherever your mind is, maybe somebody's thinking about their grocery list, but I can tell you that standing up here, I get a bow wave from you every time you give this blessing. I'm sure that other speakers experience the same thing if they're awake and listening for it. And I love standing up there. I'm just about to step into the sauna of blessing with you. Whoosh, goes over me, and then I'm ready to go. But this happens week after week after week. You've been talking about signatures of energy and atmospheres. This is a part of your signature. So as you just tend to these sacred housekeeping duties of hospitality, welcoming, planning, etc., within that mindset, you're achieving at that level something enormously important, because mostly you're conscious of it. If you were doing it just as wrap the gavel, call the meeting to order, let's get the agenda done as fast as we can, that would produce another kind of experience entirely. But I know your governing board, as it were, and I know how you operate. So I think that it's this kind of tending and shepherding that accompanies the big ideas. The big ideas will come and go. But this kind of tending of the flame is, I believe, some of the most important work we can possibly do. And I think that that's what Word in Life is dedicated to. And I believe you have a very stable field now as a result. Oh, thank you. Yes. Oh, sorry, I keep
making sounds. Yes.
I want to thank you for mentioning polyglot. I thought that was true about all of us. And,
I love us.
And the other thing is about intentionality. I am not a Christian, but I'm not in anything specifically. But for in the early 80s, I was went to meditation retreats. And I can remember one time, it was after the doctors arrived late from Irvine, the retreat was in Ojai, and they were falling asleep. You know, they were just a mess. They were the worst meditators. And then finally, like day two, they like perked up, and there was one session. They ran about an hour, and there was one session where, oh, exactly what you're talking about. Oh my God, the roof! We could have taken the roof off. It was so intense, and I have stopped meditating like that. But all of that time period remains with me.
Yes,
and I always am reminded of, okay, what is my intention here? Now, I mean, I don't always remember to do this, but, you know, much more so than if I hadn't gone through that. And so what you've said today has been extremely helpful, and I thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I'd like to add another example to that, which I hadn't thought of for a while, but it was so important. It was just last year, and I went to a retreat given by Terry Ohan on poetry, and it was also with meditation involved ahead of time. And she asked everybody, you know, she read poems and asked us to take certain lines that resonated with us and write something on it and then read it. So that's what we did the first time, and people were feeling a little awkward. And they didn't, not many people wanted to do it. And there wasn't much feeling behind them. But we went on with periods of meditation and periods of writing, things that just came off the top of our heads. And all of a sudden, by the end of the day, everybody wanted to read their poetry. And all the poems were marvelous. People who had never written a poem in their life. It was just resonating from the whole area of the room. Suddenly, everybody was a poet. And that was a real example of that kind of field that we created in there by ourselves with Terry's guidance. I mean, probably wouldn't have happened without her spurring us on. But all of a sudden, everybody caught fire, and everybody could write. And I've often wondered if they went home and went on with this, or what happened. Some of them probably did.
Oh, thank you, Jackie. It's almost like ensemble work. It's almost like spiritual art practice. When you have a small group together, all within, tuned like instruments, in the same rhythm. It's one of those little ecosystems we were talking about earlier that I think evolution, the form that our particular reality operates out of, that coheres in moments like this. It's what an artist, a musician, a theater, hope for, that you'll find just that right combination when a particular performance just flies through the roof and the next three are just moving it on. It's Jackie, you've described it perfectly. Thank you. It's a wonderful example of these temporary, beautiful little fields that I think just delight God. Yes, Marianne.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
This is an amazing group. It's my first time here.
Ah.
And I know several of you. It's taken me a long time to get here. And thank you, Pat, for drawing me here. And a lot of what you said, of course, we've worked with many, many years. And I'm thinking of this unified field of consciousness that you were talking about. And from an evolutionary standpoint, we talk about the human race, we talk about the planet, we talk about the individual human evolution from the fetus onward to our whole lives. And I'd like you to speak to what we've both talked about many times, this notion of our dualistic thinking. And we are programmed in our culture to think in left, right, wrong, yes, no. And most of the culture still thinks in these terms. And in this very contentious election period, you're seeing us in our probably most primitive form of dualistic thinking.
I think so.
And I would like you to speak to the possibility of how we can, in our own individual ways and lives, use that notion of Cynthia Bourgeau's work with the third force, of how we can take the reconciling, the affirming, and the denying, and find that reconciling place. And I've been, in my own life, this is sort of my challenge, to try to find that way to be in every action, every interaction I have, to look at it from how can I reconcile this into a unified field. So I'd like you to speak to that.
Oh, just that? Let me start with the work of Parker Palmer. I think you all are familiar with that remarkable Quaker, who, out of the deep Quaker habit of silence and listening, which they call discerning, and which I call discerning also. Discerning is a little bit like intention. It's a tort. It's many levels of meaning all at once. But discerning essentially is seeing what's beneath, behind, what is ordinarily obscured. Palmer teaches how to see in that new way. It's as if one learns to walk around in the dualistic world, and you have in your inner ear one of those little Bluetooth, you know, those odd little things that look like you're from Mars, stuck into your ear. There's that little constant feed of inner wisdom, of inner connection that you can learn to implement in your daily life. Oh, it takes a long time. We started at All Saints by the Sea with this particular kind of Quaker practice in 1997. And out of it has slowly come a whole host of spiritual practice ministries, but all quite small, all very sincere, and all truly practiced. Doesn't seem to froth up into a great, big, exciting group of interest. This is small, intense, deep work, a little like what Word in Life does. Palmer has most recently been trying to teach out of his headquarters in Seattle something called the Five Habits of the Heart. They're all about that middle force, that middle path. We at All Saints have been following the work because some of us are, as you all are, struggling with the culture we're living in and with the particular level of intense negativity that's just pouring everywhere. So we have read together and discerned for a period of about 6 to 8 weeks his Healing the Heart of Democracy. If you haven't picked it up and read it yet, I would urge you to have a serious look at it. It's beautifully put together. And the Five Habits of the Heart essentially are all to teach us how to become safe enough in ourselves so that we are not immediately pulled into that polarizing opposition to whatever we don't want to hear or whatever we think is flat wrong, and instead just widen and widen our aperture of listening so that we find eventually that we're listening not with the sharp intellect but with that deep heart that recognizes that this crazy person over here who's saying the things that I definitely disagree with is also a person first, who has opinions second loud as they may be. But to move to that mutuality is one of those first mutual steps to beginning to open up to the other. Because ultimately, as you know, as Parker Palmer knows, the other is us. So he teaches with these habits of the heart ways of just becoming quiet in oneself and listening to the other and looking for that one sweet spot, that one tile on the floor where both of you have a certain amount of agreement. Just a little, you don't need a lot, but it's enough to allow you to move together on. And that is those first baby steps is where we have landed. So a very pragmatic, small example of where one might start or a group might start. Thank you. Yes.
All I can say is thank you, thank you, thank you. When I did my presentation here, I knew that this was one of the most important moments I would have in my life. I could feel the energy as I was preparing to be here. And today you opened up that door again to our heart. The first thing, as you said, that we develop when we're in utero is our heart. And how do we go back to that? And some of the people you mentioned today are in the video that we're going to show on Monday night. It's almost like you're the first part of this video. You opened our minds to the possibility. Carl Sagan, a few weeks before he died, I had the honor of meeting him and interviewing him and listening to his words and putting it on video. And I'm so delighted that you're going to be on video. But the part that I wanted to talk to is many of the questions today. How do you stand in the impossible? Mm. How do you stand and be present? The only thing you can do is be sometimes. Just be. You may not find one thing you agree in, but you just be that person that's there. Because that's where healing takes place. And you said it today. I just felt like I was looking at somebody who, your wisdom is so powerful. And I want to thank all of you for bringing all of us together so that that unified field. I remember meeting with Dr. Sheldrake and he said, you know where you can see this? In the animals.
Yes.
And I said, what do you mean in the animals? How come that dog is by your door when you leave your office an hour before you get home? How come? He's in that field of intention, right?
Yes.
And so I'm sitting there and I'm listening to him and I'm getting goose pimples because you just don't know the wisdom that these people carry. But people like you keep spreading it and I thank you with all my heart.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
I was thinking about the other unified field is the arts.
Ah.
And I went to hear Beethoven's Ninth at the Santa Barbara Symphony. I don't know how many were lucky enough. Oh, my gosh. And there were tenth of a second, where there was, you know how Beethoven's, da-da-da, whatever. Is that the ninth? No, I'm going to do it in the fifth. Okay. Anyway, there's half of a second or whatever, and it's all quiet in there. It's this unified field. And I made a decision to go in there and just totally get washed in that music. And the other thing I thought, when you think about all those musicians, their education, what it takes to get there, and all the people, what it takes to get to the Granada, and we're all there.
Yes.
That is so miraculous to me. Babysitters, car problems,
yes.
Mother-in-law, whatever. I mean, think about that. That's a miracle in itself. So, anyway, I just find the arts are another heart and unified dimension of who we are and however we want to take that in.
Especially music. Because music is vibration.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is just resonating. There is, if I had to give up all but one of the arts, and art is my background, it's what was my bread and butter for many years, it would be music.
You would hold on to music.
I would hold on to music. But form and color are vibrational as well. They literally are. So this could start another. Wouldn't it be fun to do a thing about just art? You've already suggested at least 5 different years worth of work here for Word and Life. Thank you for this, because it's just true.
You know, we should have an all-day session with different speakers, like a mini marathon of Word and Life. Anyway.
There you go. Add that to the agenda.
Well, I think we've run out of time. But I know you all want to help me thank Pat for being here.
Thank you. It's my great honor. My great honor. Thank you, Anne.